Welcome to another edition of the Membership World podcast. My name is Gordon Glenister, and I'm the founder of Membership World. This edition is sponsored by our friends at RD Mobile, the complete membership events engagement platform. But before we get started, please don't forget to subscribe to this podcast just to make sure that you don't miss a future episode. Now, in today's episode, I'm talking with Amanda Hamilton, who's the patron of the National Association of Licensed Paralegals. And we're talking about the importance of paralegals in society, but also about sexual harassment in the workforce and how best to manage it.
NALP was originally set up in 1987 as a membership body for people working within the legal sector who had no qualifications, but were nevertheless doing legal work. The word paralegal became synonymous with people who did that, worked in law firms without having qualifications. And indeed, the word paralegal has come over from the States at that time. So in the late 80s and early 90s, it was a relatively new term. But slowly, we've started building on that. And anyone that now does any kind of legal work, whether it be within a law firm frame, within the legal sector, or outside of the legal sector, in in-house legal departments, they can call themselves paralegals and join our membership body. So basically, we're all about enhancing the status of paralegals. And very recently in our history, you know, we've started promoting the idea that paralegals can offer legal services directly to consumers. And this has actually taken off in the last 10 years since legal aid was virtually abolished in 2013. And that's because consumers need access to justice at a reasonable cost. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I find it very hard if I had a legal problem to pay £500 an hour to a solicitor. So paralegals, obviously, who are competent and experienced, can step in to assist consumers if they need that kind of help. So basically, we're all about enhancing the status of paralegals, liaising with other bodies within the sector, the legal sector. And we've got a pretty good reputation, I think, with our dealings with those other bodies, you know, Bar Council, the Bar Standards Board, the Legal Services Board, the SRA, etc. Everybody knows we're here now, which is something they didn't know about when I first took over as CEO way back in 2008. I'm no longer the CEO, but I still have an active part as patron and director of the association to promote what we do. And here I am.
Here you are, absolutely. How many members have you got?
In the thousands, I couldn't tell you exactly the number off the top of my head, but it's a very growing sector. I think the last couple of reports from the SRA is that the paralegal profession, and we do call it a profession, is the fastest growing legal profession within the sector. You do have solicitors and barristers and chartered legal executives, but a lot of people now are taking up the mantle of learning a bit of legal background to be able to assist the members of the public who need their help. So yes, exact numbers I couldn't tell you, but it's growing all the time.
Growing awesome. That's really good to hear. So just listening to what you said a few minutes ago, do the solicitors then that are charging those sorts of rates see the paralegals as competitors because they're now offering services on a direct basis?
That question is very interesting because actually they do, but they don't have to, because basically a lot of the work that paralegal practitioners help consumers with are the lower end of the market. You know, they've got a £500 debt or they've got a £5,000 debt and they need help in taking somebody to court over it. These are the kinds of cases that solicitors actually don't want to deal with because they're too minor. And this is also a message we're trying to get across to the SRA. We're not stepping on anybody's toes here. Our practitioners are just taking up the slack that has been left for those consumers who find it very difficult to afford to pay solicitors, and for those solicitors who really don't want to deal with the lower end type of cases. So it's a very interesting question to put out there. And if any lawyers are listening in, I would say we're not stepping on your toes. We're just trying to assist consumers to gain access to justice at a reasonable cost. That's all.
No, absolutely understand. Now, the subject matter that we want to talk about here, which has been all over the news over the last 2 or 3 months, is some of the challenges about human behaviour, particularly on the football ground. And I'm talking about the Women's Football World Cup, which was a phenomenally successful event for actually England, but also for the Spanish team. But what happened following that, of course, has been a global storm, hasn't it? And of course, it's had all sorts of repercussions within the workplace. And what's really fascinated me is how many organizations are almost experiencing this sort of hassle and misogyny and all these sexual discrimination that's been going on for years. And maybe this is a watershed moment in actually starting to move the needle about what is acceptable and what isn't in the workplace or in social society. And what's your thoughts about it from a legal point of view?
Well, from a legal point of view, we've come a very long way. We've got Equality Acts, we've got Same-Sex Marriage Acts, Civil Partnership Acts. We've got all sorts of legislation in place that means that it's illegal to discriminate against someone because of their sex, because of their race, or whatever it is. But it doesn't stop it happening. And the fact that there's legislation in place actually in reality means that it's very, very difficult for a victim of discrimination to provide evidence now, which they need to. If there's a court case going to ensue, you always need to supply evidence to back up your case. When you look back 50, 60 years to the society we had, where the people felt it was their right to put a notice in the window saying, no blacks here, they could express themselves how they wanted without recourse. Well, of course, that doesn't happen anymore. But it doesn't stop people having those discriminatory thoughts, reacting in a prejudiced way towards somebody. It's just gone underground a little bit. You know, it happens. Misogyny in the workplace, sexism in the workplace still goes on. And the difficulty there is that the victim knows that this is what is happening to them, but how can they prove it?
Yeah. Or will it affect, of course, their career by raising the issue, particularly when it's somebody that's in a very influential or powerful position, as we saw, of course, on the football pitch?
On the football pitch. Now, that particular example, of course, you had the president of the Football Federation grabbing a player's head and giving her a whacking great big kiss on the lips. I joined in a radio program, a phone-in program, where I was absolutely outraged by some of the comments. You know, what's all the fuss about? He was just in the moment, you know. And I'm thinking to myself, but would he have done that if it was the men's team that had won? Would he have grabbed one of the male players like that and gave a whacking great big kiss on that footballer's lips? I don't think so. So I was just up in arms about it. And then, of course, the whole furor afterwards about how he claimed she was lying, that it was consensual. How could it possibly have been consensual? Did he say, excuse me, may I give you a kiss on the lips? And did she say, yes, of course you may? Of course that didn't happen. He took it for granted that he was allowed to do that. And that's what really got me going and thinking about all the comments that friends have made to me in the past about what has happened to them. The difficulty now is it is going to be one person's word against another.
I mean, the difference there, of course, it was TV coverage, so we could all see it for what it's worth. But of course, in many instances, these microaggressions that you see in the boardroom or you see in the workplace where it might be really difficult to prove, and people think it's going to be a stain on their career in some shape or form, so they almost accept it.
You have to swallow it. As a woman, I've experienced misogyny in the workplace on numerous occasions. You just sort of swallow it and move on. But there are occasions where you have to say something. And I remember saying something to my boss years ago, how inappropriate I thought the comments he was making were. And his reaction was, oh, chill out. I'm just having a bit of fun. You know, you've got to change your attitude if you want to move on. And I just thought to myself, God, you know, it was 30, 40 years ago, but nevertheless, that kind of thing still happens. I know it does because I have friends who tell me about it. You know, there are a number of occasions where I can recall friends of mine telling me about incidents that have happened. But the question is, what can we do? And what can we do about it? And it's a difficult one. I personally believe that we've got to educate, well, clearly we've got to educate attitudes generally, but those people who are dealing with victims or alleged incidents, they now put under the umbrella, by the way, of antisocial behaviour, those people who are dealing with the victims of antisocial behaviour should bear in mind that it's within the eye of the beholder. If you perceive someone to be aggressive because they're homophobic or because they're racist, that should be acceptable. And not to believe the other person's word, who says, oh, no, there was nothing in it. It was just a spate. It was just nothing. You know, why should that person's word be taken as the truth over a victim's word? And this is something that I was trying to sort of get across a little bit, both when I was on the radio and in the article, I think, that provoked this discussion. It's a very difficult one because, you know, the laws are there to protect, but they only protect so far. If a case goes to court, naturally you need evidence. Even with antisocial behaviour, they send you documents to record incidents that may be happening over and over. But this kind of thing could be a one-off. It may not be continuous. And I had a friend who was suffering dreadfully from noise from a neighbour. Constant, loud music, day and night, weekends, 4 o'clock in the morning. And the antisocial behaviour team just sent her a document to fill in whenever these incidents occurred. And they couldn't really do anything about it without evidence. So it's a very difficult one. And it's a shame, really, about the World Cup, because I'm an ex-footballer. I used to play football and I absolutely loved the World Cup. I thought the standard of play was brilliant from all the teams, you know. And this one incident has marred a wonderful event. And it's a shame, but it has brought it into the media world, and quite rightly so. But I'm sure that we'll be discussing this for many years to come.
Well, indeed. I mean, that's the one good thing is that in the same way that the Me Too thing that happened during the Harvey Weinstein case in America, it created a lot of change and people started to rise up towards it. And then we had Black Lives Matter as well. So I think things have progressed. And I think you'll agree with that over the years. It's almost like we as a society need to embrace and think that's not acceptable, rather than just having the statute there is when other people say, you know, that's not acceptable. In other words, the law is there as a last resort. But in the same way that we now see drink driving as unacceptable behavior, and you'll look disdainfully now if you've got a drink driving conviction, as opposed to, you know, 30 years ago, it was just another thing that you would have and people would just do it as they felt they needed. But of course, you're right in saying that it's all about education. And the more times that we highlight these instances, and what you guys are doing, of course, is very important as well.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, Gordon. You know, we do have to change the attitude of society generally, to say this is not acceptable. You know, Black Lives Matter and the Me Too campaign did just that. And you pointed out about drink driving, but smoking now as well. I mean, I know it's a habit that some people still love to smoke cigarettes, but it is frowned upon now. And certainly taking it out of restaurants, and there was a transition period where I remember people used to have smoking areas and non-smoking areas. And now it's just been taken out of the bar situation, of the restaurant situation. It's fine to have a habit. And if somebody wants to smoke, that's perfectly fine by me. Just don't do it where I might be affected, is my comment, you know.
Just having respect for other people, I think. The whole word of respect comes in, sort of underlines everything, doesn't it? The only thing that I did think about when it came to the incident in Spain is that we also don't want to go too far the other way when it comes to greeting people, that we're scared to even embrace somebody. I don't mean necessarily on the lips, but, you know, as I was saying to somebody on the other train, what happens if, you know, you're going to greet somebody on either side of the cheek, which is part of, in many instances, natural cultural behavior, and then somebody backs away as if to say, poof, don't touch me.
I think having discussed this with friends of mine, and some of whom are South American and Spanish, that if he'd had grabbed her and, you know, hugged her, shook her hand, that would have been acceptable, male or female. That's not a problem. I dance Argentine tango, and one of the things that we do all the time is we kiss everybody we meet. We hug and kiss them. But if somebody took my head and kissed me on the lips, I'd seriously push them away with vigor. It's not acceptable. So I do understand your anxiety on that. But I think that culturally, there is an acceptability of how far you can go. And I think that that man, Morales, I think his name is, I think he knows he went too far. He does know. If he'd had just shaken her hand and given her a hug, I'm pretty sure none of this would have happened.
But what I didn't like was the arrogance afterwards, and I'm sure you agree with it. And I think that was one of the reasons that sealed his fate, is because he just felt as though
nothing could touch him. Yeah.
And from what I understand from others and the media, this is not the first time he's done this. This is an individual who's used his power and influence on a number of occasions. And of course, there are others in our society. And I really loathe that, if I'm honest. And we've seen it in politics, haven't we? There's even been dramas about it. I'm watching one at the moment on Netflix about it. And so we should be respectful of each other, shouldn't we? And the law is there, as you rightly say, to support that.
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head. The law supports that, but it doesn't protect victims. No. And the only thing that can protect victims is, as you quite rightly say, this word respect and the attitudes that society has generally towards it. You see it at football matches anyway. You know, you hear when people get really excited, they come out with some racist slur about something. And the looks that other people give this guy, you know, who's shouted this racial slur, is great, because it's basically saying, shut up, mate, this is not acceptable. This is how we must try and approach it. We must have a change in attitude. Society must find it unacceptable that these things happen. And that's the only way to protect victims.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for coming on the programme today. It's been lovely talking to you and hearing about the great work that you're doing at the association. If anybody wants to find out about the association, how can they do that? Is there a website link that you can share?
There is a website link. It's nationalparalegals.co.uk. It's been a great pleasure talking to you, Gordon. Thank you very much for inviting me.
This podcast is sponsored by RD Mobile, providing events and member engagement solutions used by organisations worldwide. RD Mobile can help your organisation deliver value at your next virtual or in-person event and throughout the year. Visit us at rdmobile.com to learn more.
That's it for another edition of the Membership World podcast. Thanks again to our sponsor, RD Mobile, and my producer, Neil Whiteside from Freedom One. And until next time, from me, Gordon Glenister, it's bye for now.